I call this meeting of the Climate and Energy Committee to order, and we do have a quorum. We've got a full room today. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from January 17th?
I have, Madam Chair, and I move their approval.
Great. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. And so we are moving right into House File 7 today. Representative Long, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you so much, Terry.
So I will just say we have a really full agenda. As you can see, we have a full room and lots of people who are interested in testifying on this bill. And so just ask people to be mindful of time, and maybe as we get to the testimony section, I'll say who's up and maybe who's on deck to kind of keep things moving as quickly as we can. And then we'll do the amendments. We'll then talk about the bill and have some time for questions after that. But we will be voting the bill out of committee tonight, or this afternoon, I'm hoping. So, Representative Long, welcome to the committee. I'd like to move House File 7 to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Long has an author's amendment coded A7. I'll move the A7 to get the bill in the shape the author would like, though I understand there may be an oral amendment. So let's see, I will, oral amendments to the A7. Do you want to read those or should I? I will. Page 7. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Long, go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I can describe them if you'd like. I don't think I can move them anymore, but I'll describe them to you.
Yeah.
So there are two on the A7, and they are minor. The first is that on page 3, line 7, we would delete a public and insert an electric. So it would, instead of reading a public utility, it would read an electric utility, and that is to try to achieve the original intent of the amendment, which would be to cover all utilities. And then the second amendment would be on page 7, line 27, to delete 24 and insert 28, which is just an incorrect page and line reference.
And maybe staff, will you repeat that so that we make sure that we've got it accurately?
Yes, Madam Chair. On the H0007A7 amendment, on page 3, line 7, delete the words a public and insert the words an electric. And on the same amendment, page 7, line 27, delete 24 and insert 28.
Any questions on the amendment, or the oral amendment, I mean? The oral amendments. Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendments to A7 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And now we will go to the underlying A7 amendment. And are there any questions by members to the A7 amendment? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my understanding is then that the author of the bill is going to walk through these changes when we are actually on House File 7. We're not going to be going through it twice.
Thank you.
So,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
That will be the procedure.
I would just ask, Madam Chair, to the author, maybe when you're going through the bill, if you could just walk through these changes so that not only members but members of the public understand the changes that were made. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Raffel. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And then we also have an additional oral amendment. Representative Long, will you? Let's see, I lost my place. Will you describe the amendment?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So the oral amendment I'd request is on page 2, line 4, delete 185 and insert 200. And this is in the underlying bill, not A7. Was meant to just make sure we were covering accurately the environmental justice areas that we intended.
And Representative Long, I think it's actually page 2, line 14.
14. Okay. Thank you.
I may have said 4, but page 2, line 14, delete 185 and insert 200. So, staff, would you so we make sure we have it clear?
Yes, Madam Chair. On House File 7, page 2, line 14, delete 185, insert 200.
Any questions about that bill amendment? All right, seeing none, I will move the oral amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the oral amendment is adopted. Now that we've gotten all that done, Representative Long, would you please tell us about your bill?
I'd be happy to. Well, first I'll be happy to speak briefly to the changes in the amendment per Representative Garofalo's request, and then I'll speak to the bill more generally. So the amendment added in some provisions we had intended to include originally on making sure that we're helping protect local workers and making sure that we are giving the ability to consider local job impacts and benefits and preferences as the bill is going forward. We also added in a fix for shoulder season operation of coal plants, which is the Section 31. And we added in language on partial credit to take care of circumstances where there is a facility that is partially carbon-free. And we added in some clarifying language to deal with some of the trying to achieve our intent better from the original bill. So those are a few of the highlights. If there are specific questions for Representative Garofalo, I'm happy to take those in questions. So members, the last 8 years globally have been the hottest 8 years on record. Minnesota is among the top states seeing rapid changes to our climate. And in my lifetime alone, the average January low temperature has risen by an astonishing 9 degrees. Climate change is impacting our farms through increased flooding, soil erosion, and weather variability. It's impacting our cities from costly repairs and upgrades to our infrastructure. And it's impacting our state traditions from snowmobiling to trout fishing. And the fossil fuel pollution that's causing climate change is harming us too. There are around 2,000 early deaths in the metro every year from air pollution. Minnesota has long been a clean energy leader. We built the first industrial-scale wind farm between California and Denmark. We passed a bipartisan renewable energy standard in 2007. And being an early mover gave us a competitive advantage. In fact, Minnesota companies have installed nearly half of all wind turbines across the U.S. in the last decade. So we have a lot to be proud of, but we've slipped. Other states have seen the opportunity and are passing us by. We are now 9th in the country for wind, when we used to rank higher. We are 15th in the country on solar and only 24th in projected growth for solar. We're also not on track to hit our goal of reducing carbon emissions 80% by 2050, and this goal is still short of what science says we need to achieve. But we can turn this around. We have an incredible opportunity now to regain our clean energy leadership. Minnesota doesn't have any fossil fuels, so we send $13 billion out of state each year to buy energy. That's 4% of our state GDP that could create jobs right here in Minnesota. We should spend this here to build wind and solar instead and make the 140 tons of steel in each wind turbine with Minnesota-made taconite. Our state's three largest utilities have all committed to 100% clean energy. This is remarkable leadership and means that over 80% of Minnesota electric customers already have a utility that is committed to rapid decarbonization. The utilities have said that while climate is important to their customers in making these decisions, the real driver is cost. In the last decade, the costs of solar energy and storage have declined by 85%, and wind energy has declined by 55%. Wind is the cheapest form of electricity, period, and solar is cheaper than any new fossil fuel plants. Both have the added benefit of a guaranteed cost, so there's no susceptibility to fuel price swings like we've seen with gas prices recently. Great River Energy lost $170 million at its largest coal plant in 2019 before selling it. By selling it, GRE projected rate cuts of over 10% for its member co-ops. Xcel noted $200 million in customer savings from having installed renewable energy instead of gas in its steel for fuel transition. And now, zero carbon sources as of last year provide over half of Minnesota's electricity. With the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act at the federal level, renewable energy is even cheaper. It will mean 10 years of incentives for wind, solar, batteries, help with transmission build-out, and more. Xcel reported that the Inflation Reduction Act would reduce the cost of its proposed Sherco Solar by 30%. The Inflation Reduction Act was a huge step forward after many years of effort, but we know that it gets us 40% reductions in greenhouse gases by 2030, when President Biden has committed the country to see 50% reductions. So action at the state level is still urgently needed to help the U.S. meet its climate goals. Some have asked in this committee before what one state alone can do. And the answer is that collectively, states can make a big difference. 51% of the U.S. population now lives in a state with 100% clean energy standard or goal. That's 21 states total. So while Minnesota wasn't the first or the second, we sure as heck better be the 22nd. We can do this. There was a landmark study that showed that using today's technology, 90% clean energy by 2035, as the study measured, is not only possible nationwide, it would be cheaper and it would create more jobs. With Minnesota's wind and solar resources, the study projects that our state would do even better than 90%, well on our way to 100%. Going to 100% clean energy would mean cheaper power, more jobs, better health, and helping do our part to confront climate change. Minnesota has led before. Let's be a clean energy leader once again. And Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I have a few individuals I'd like to have speak to the bill.
Great. And with that, I think we'll invite up Michael Noble with Fresh Energy. If you can please say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Noble, and I'm the Executive Director at Fresh Energy, here to support Representative Long's 100% clean electricity standard. So when we first passed our renewable electricity standard in 2007, the goal was 18 years away, and some doubted that we could achieve it. But not only did we achieve it, we did it 8 years earlier, and we did it much, much cheaper than anyone thought possible. The time has now come for 100% clean electricity standard. As Representative Long has said, the climate science demands this, and in the last decade, the cost of solar energy and storage and wind power have declined dramatically, 85% for wind and storage and 55% for 85% for solar and storage and 55% for wind power. And the passage of the Federal Inflation Reduction Act basically puts all these technologies on sale 30% off for 10 years running. So this is a great time to accelerate our efforts. Our three largest utilities have all publicly committed to get to 100% clean energy. They're all national leaders on clean energy innovation and deployment. Zero carbon resources now supply over half of Minnesota's electricity. And our utilities just need these time-bound horizons and certainty in order to plan to make these investments. A standard will give our utilities the North Star they need. So the bill is balanced. It's a balanced path. We agree that it's very, very important to keep reliability at the absolute highest standard, keep affordability at the absolute highest standard, and keep those things firmly in our view as we make the transition. Our utilities are great innovators. They're working with policymakers to solve these important challenges. The bill ensures that the utilities will continue and will accelerate their investments in new technology and practices to achieve the 100% goal without compromising any reliability. Again, our utilities can do this. Every time Minnesotans have set a goalpost, our utilities make more progress and move faster and do it cheaper than expected, and they show us what they can achieve, and they can do so much more. So clean power generation is the foundation for a carbon-free society, a carbon-free economy. Clean power is the foundation. And Minnesota's clean electricity future will ensure health for all the people, the well-being for Minnesota's to come, competitiveness for our companies worldwide, and for our environment for all generations. forthcoming. Thank you so much for having me today, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Noble. Next, we have Kevin Prentice with LIUNA. Please enter your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Akam. Committee members, my name is Kevin Prentice. I represent LIUNA, Minnesota, and North Dakota, the Laborers International Union of North America, and our 14,000 members and their family members here. And I am here today to testify on behalf of Majority Leader Long's 100% bill. And I can say that that bill has our full support. Because it has been crafted, I think, in a way that can really work. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure that 100% of all the 100% bills that have been passed around the country are actually going to work. And my prediction is that we will be the first state to get to 100% affordably and reliably, creating a model for others because of the careful thought and consideration that was put into this bill. And I'm mostly invited here to talk about the really strong labor provisions and local worker provisions that will ensure both opportunities for workers who have been keeping the lights on and for their communities who have kept the lights on for generations, as well as opportunities to put our skills to work on a whole range of new energy technologies, which isn't just wind and solar and batteries, but lots of technologies that are coming online, that are all of which are possible to deploy under this bill where they make sense for the utilities and working with the Public Utilities Commission. And so those labor provisions are critical, and I know that my colleague from the Carpenters will speak to those as well. But none of that would mean anything if we couldn't maintain reliable service for our members, right? If they didn't have electricity, right? Or if there were no system to work for. And so I think I really want to thank Chair Akam and Majority Leader Long and all the folks who have put in all this hard work to find a system that's flexible and that allows utilities work with the commission to come up with plans that serve their members and their customers. And I think this bill allows them to do that, to deploy that innovative technology with protections for affordability and reliability, and an eye on the prize, that the ultimate goal here is to build a system that can also support electrification, which is how you reduce carbon in the other sectors. And so we need these utilities to work not only as well as they work today, but better. And I would say that we couldn't be here today without the leadership of the utilities that we have, who are amazing and leading the nation on this, and that's part of why I believe in this. And also, as Chairman Long indicated, Majority Leader Long indicated, we wouldn't be here without the Inflation Reduction Act, which substantially impacts those costs. So this bill has our full support and our full confidence, and I believe that we can work together to get this done, and thank the committee for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Prentice. Appreciate that. Next, we have Greg Mass with Clean Energy Economy Minnesota. Welcome to committee. Please enter your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Mast, and I'm the Executive Director of Clean Energy Economy Minnesota. We are an industry-led, nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization that represents the business voice of clean energy here in the state. I'm here to testify today in support of House File 7, which will significantly strengthen our state's clean energy businesses through policy leadership. Our organization is proud to support House File 7 for three reasons. First, it means business opportunity. This bill provides a clear commitment that positions Minnesota as a leader in the transition towards a net zero economy. Through continued collaboration and partnership alongside our utilities, this will unleash significant job creation, spur business model innovation, and expand investments all across our state. Second, this legislation strengthens Minnesota's energy independence and security. In a recent statewide survey conducted by our organization, 85% of voters agreed that we should accelerate the growth of clean energy so that we can produce more of our own electricity in Minnesota and rely less on importing from other states and countries. Utilizing our abundant in-state renewable resources will reduce our energy, our dependence on energy imports, while keeping energy dollars and economic benefits local. And third, House File 7 mitigates risk. Our companies know that climate risk is business risk. Delivering policy certainty to fully decarbonize our state's power sector enhances the ability for businesses to achieve their own internal clean energy and climate goals, while also helping them meet the increased demands from investors, customers, employees, and stakeholders who expect sustainable operations. So in closing, as you've heard from previous testifiers, Minnesota has already successfully demonstrated that we're up to the challenge of decarbonizing our power sector and delivering economic benefits. Today, nearly 58,000 Minnesotans work in good-paying clean energy jobs, with nearly 40% of these jobs residing in greater Minnesota. And these jobs have been growing historically 2 times faster than all other sectors of our economy. SEEM urges your support of House File 7 and this incredible economic opportunity. We thank Majority Leader Long, Chair Akam, for supporting and bringing forward this bill. And we look forward to also working with all of you and the stakeholders in this room and outside of this room to ensure that together we can secure and move our state towards a thriving and prosperous clean energy future. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Mass. And next we have Adam Dunick, Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. Welcome to committee. And your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, I'm Adam Dunick. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. It's a real pleasure to be here along with SEEM and Fresh Energy and LIUNA and Majority Leader Long testifying today. The North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters represents approximately 12,000 workers, members and their families across the region in the upper Midwest. Our members do jobs such as they are carpenters, millwrights, floor covers, lathers, pile drivers, industrial workers across our state. They also work in a wide array of energy infrastructure, construction and maintenance, including existing fossil fuel plants, wind, solar, and nuclear. The energy transition won't necessarily be easy for many of our members. They perform maintenance work in some of the existing fossil fuel plants. But as a union, we recognize the need to reduce carbon emissions to address climate change, and we're proud of the work our members have already done in partnership with the Minnesota Utilities, helping the state transition. We also believe in a technology-neutral approach, and one that gives the utilities all of the tools in the toolbox to reduce carbon emissions while continuing to provide affordable and reliable power. We're especially appreciative of Chair Long's ongoing work on this bill, the active outreach he made to us and other organizations, including the addition of the A7 amendment today. In particular, we're strongly supportive of the updated prevailing wage language, which will help ensure that we transition as we transition, workers who build and maintain our state's energy system will receive family-sustaining wages and benefits. In addition to prevailing wage setting the area standard for what men and women in the trades earn on a day-to-day basis working in the field, it also helps to support our apprenticeship programs. Our gold standard in the construction industry programs in Minnesota alone, the carpenters spent over $20 million on our program. The building trades invest over $50 million, largely without any taxpayer subsidy, if any at all. We strongly support House File 7 today as amended by the author's amendment. We would encourage your members of the committee to vote yes. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, Mr. Dunning. And before we go to member questions, we're going to have Commissioner Grace Arnold present. She has to step out for a minute. Welcome to committee, Commissioner Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Akam and members. For the record, I'm Grace Arnold, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 7, the 100% Clean Energy Bill. This bill is the result of years of work here at the legislature and across the state with stakeholders, communities, workers, advocates, utilities, and others. It's been a priority since the beginning of the Walz Flanagan administration, and I'm really grateful to Majority Leader Long and Chair Akam for their leadership on this important piece of legislation. 100% by 2040 is a critical component of the Climate Action Framework. Our administration released Minnesota's Climate Action Framework last September after nearly 2 years of engagement with Minnesotans across the state. Through that process, we heard loud and clear that Minnesotans value our clean air and water, our traditions, and the future we're building for our children and grandchildren. Our climate change work will follow the science, confront challenges head on, and ensure everyone can benefit from the solutions. State leaders developed the framework, again, with over 3,000 Minnesotans providing input, that prioritizes bold action, new ideas, and ensuring that new voices, including tribal nations and communities disproportionately impacted by climate change, are heard. We can create a carbon-neutral, resilient, and equitable future for Minnesota through the Climate Action Framework, and that starts here. Electrical utilities have made significant strides in producing cleaner electricity. Investments in clean energy, energy efficiency, and energy reliability will continue to create jobs, lower energy costs, and contribute to a more stable climate. By transitioning to 100% clean energy by 2040, Minnesota utilities can lead the way to healthier air through significant reduction in greenhouse gases. Decarbonization of the electric power sector can lead to additional greenhouse gas reductions in the transportation and thermal end uses through beneficial electrification. This proposal gives utilities the planning time and flexibility they need to reach 100% while maintaining reliability and affordability in the electric system for all Minnesotans. Minnesotans are now powering a clean energy future through expanded job, and this bill will expand on the job opportunities and increase the amount of jobs available in the clean energy sector. This bill supports an emerging workforce by prioritizing good-paying jobs. I just want to say thank you to Majority Leader Long and members. I really look forward to working with you as this bill moves through the legislature and then on to us to implement. And I really thank you for the time.
Thank you, Commissioner Arnold, for being here. And maybe with that, we'll welcome Majority Leader Long back to the table and see if there are any questions from members. I think Representative Garofalo had some questions that maybe.
Madam Chair, why don't we go to public testimony so that we.
Sure. Anyone else before we do? We want to make sure we're getting questions if they have any. With that, then, maybe we will proceed to public testimony. And we do have over 20 people who have signed up. So if we can be as brief as possible, that'd be helpful, but want to hear from all of you. First, we have Aurora Botrin from the 100% campaign. And after that, we're going to have Chris Clark from Northern States Power. And we're shooting for about 90 seconds, if you can. I appreciate you here. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Aurora Votrin, and I'm the Legislative and Political Director for the Minnesota 100% campaign. Thank you, Chair Acomb, committee members, and staff for the opportunity to testify today. I also want to thank our chief author, Majority Leader Long, and the co-authors who sit on this committee as well for their work on this bill, which, if passed, would be the single biggest action our state has taken to address the climate crisis. The Minnesota 100% campaign is a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to build an equitable clean energy future for everyone in Minnesota. We have almost 60 organizational endorsers to date who have come together because we believe that all Minnesotans, regardless of their race, gender, income, status, and zip code, deserve 100% clean energy. Our coalition has had thousands of conversations with people across the state, and we can tell you that they have made loud and clear that they unequivocally support 100% clean and renewable energy. To protect the places that we love, to address our changing climate, to lower our electricity bills, to lessen asthma and cardiovascular disease, and for many other reasons you'll hear from other testifiers today. Minnesotan support for 100% has and continues to be strong and durable. The action you take today is bigger than this bill. It's bigger than this hearing. It's a moment that will signal how the state of Minnesota chooses to act, or not, on the climate crisis we face. This is a historic moment, and I ask you, committee members, to meet it by supporting the 100% clean energy bill. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Foster. Mr. Clark, welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed. And next we will have Deb Bergen with Missouri River Energy.
Thank you. I'm Chris Clark. I'm president of Xcel Energy's Northern States Power Company, serving Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. I had the pleasure of serving on the governor's advisory task force to the climate subcabinet and as co-chair of the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee. Thank you, Majority Leader Long and Chair Acomb, for the opportunity to appear today. Minnesota has shown great leadership on renewable and carbon-free energy. Our customers benefit from the constructive regulatory environment provided by policymakers, allowing us to lead the clean energy transition and to do so affordably. In fact, we have saved our customers over $1 billion with our wind additions alone since 2017 versus using traditional fossil fuels. At Xcel Energy, we set a nation-leading vision to achieve 100% carbon-free energy affordably and reliably by 2050 and to move from 60% carbon-free energy today to about 80 or 85% by 2030. Your bill, House File 7 today, encourages us to go faster, which we find exciting but challenging. To meet the challenge, we want to quickly move forward, working with labor and the trades to build the projects already approved in our last IRP, including the state's largest solar project in Becker, Minnesota, one of our host communities, which will feature an important workforce development effort. To meet the challenge of 2040, we will also need to innovate and embrace new technologies. We, as in Minnesota, we will be efficient and tackle more at once and deviate from our traditional evaluation principles to include the value of innovation in our projects. Fortunately, Minnesota is well positioned to take advantage of the IIJA and the IRA, which Majority Leader Long cited, which provides substantial infrastructure and clean energy benefits to our customers. Benefits will flow from embracing innovation. These are good investments in Minnesota's future and our neighboring states who we serve as well. We appreciate the amendments supporting the thoughtful wind down of operations at our existing coal units. We all take affordability and reliability seriously, so we thank you for including a reasonable process for the Commission to adjust as necessary. We plan an integrated system that covers and works with policymakers in five upper Midwest states, and we're eager to share our plans with them as well. We look forward to continuing to be a great partner in building the necessary infrastructure, working with our employees, labor, and the trades to work with our policymakers and leaders to continue to bring carbon-free energy to our customers, and look forward to bringing it to other sectors as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carson. Next, we have Deb Burden with Missouri River, and after that will be Peter Wagenius with Sierra Club. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record. And continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Deb Bergen. I'm with Missouri River Energy Services. I'm going to start off by saying that even though I'm with Missouri River Energy Services, I've been asked to do a little double duty with the committee today. I'm sorry for that, you weren't informed. MMUA has also asked me to make a few comments on their behalf as well. For starters, who is MRES? We are a municipal power agency. We serve 61 member municipal electric communities in the state of Minnesota. There are actually 124 municipal electric utilities in the state of Minnesota. We serve 25 of them, but all 124 are MMUA's members and customers. One of the amendments that, one part of the A7 amendment that was brought forth now made this 100% standard applicable to the individual munis who are not part of a municipal power agency like MRES itself. That raises some unintended consequences and some concerns that MMUA asked me to bring up, as well as the concerns of MRES today. One more thing I will add about MMUA and MRES. To point to MRES, that we are in actually two different renewable energy RTOs, and we provide, and that's divided, some of those Minnesota communities are in two RTOs. But to sum up, what do the RTOs do? We bid in all our power, and we bid in our load. It's the RTOs that tell us what to run. If we're told to run less than our demand, under this bill, we have to retire RECs, renewable energy credits, which are limited. Those individual municipal electrics that I referred to will not be in a position to buy those RECs, or will have to compete for those RECs on the market, as they do not, many of them do not have contracts for carbon-free generation such as nuclear, carbon capture, sequestration, and other resources. I see I'm out of time already. I apologize, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bergen. Next, we have Peter Wagenius. After that will be Britta Andrews with Minn Kota Power. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Wagenius. State your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Peter Wagenius. I'm Legislative Director for Sierra Club. The public is demanding action on the climate crisis, and we cannot miss this opportunity. There's many ideas to address the climate, some big, some real, some big and some small, some real and some fake. The bill before you is big, and it is real. As you review ideas, remember the two biggest climate bills were passed by the House 2 years ago. Omnibus Energy, including 100%, and Omnibus Transportation, including ongoing revenue for transit statewide. Thank you. These two bills remain Sierra Club's top priorities. Some sectors, like electricity and surface transportation, are faster to decarbonize than others, like heavy industry or aviation, because the key technologies we need, solar, wind, energy storage, already exist, and the costs continue to fall dramatically. One other specific thank you. Burning garbage should not be considered removable the same as solar and wind, so we appreciate that the largest burner is not. We have a history of disproportionately putting pollution in black and brown neighborhoods, so that provision is a step towards justice. In conclusion, how fast we get to net zero is as crucial as the goal itself. That's the time value of carbon that you've discussed. That's why we can't waste time or money on dead-end pathways. Knowing the challenges ahead in other sectors should lead us to be racing forward, as you are in electricity and in transportation, where the path is clear and the benefits are overwhelming. We will share our other comments in writing. Thank you, House members, for continuing to lead the way.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brita Endrud. I'm here on behalf of the Minn Kota Power Cooperative, a small not-for-profit G&T that provides power to 8-member owner co-ops in northwestern Minnesota. Minn Kota appreciates the opportunity to comment on House File 7. It's Minn Kota's mission to provide our member owners with the best energy value, and we continue to invest in ways to keep energy affordable and reliable in an environmentally responsible way. We continue to pursue carbon reduction of our generating assets while still providing baseload power during extreme weather events and while the regional grid is under increasing strain. Minn Kota has many serious concerns with this bill, and chiefly among them are what this means for maintaining reliable and affordable resources in the power generation mix. Minn Kota recognizes the need to decarbonize the electric sector, but this must be approached with the utmost care and consideration. For years, we have led, Minn Kota has led with an aggressive wind portfolio that we have earned national recognition from the Department of Energy for. Minn Kota is also pursuing and undertaking one of the most ambitious carbon capture projects in the world, Project Tundra, which seeks the carbon to capture and sequester 4 million tons of carbon dioxide annually from our Milton R. Young station, and that is equivalent to taking 800,000 fossil fuel vehicles off the road. Rural areas also have unique needs that are simply different than others. Policymakers over the years have understood this and have trusted these member-owned institutions to make self-governance central to moving their communities forward. This bill, however, erodes cooperative governance with a one-size-fits-all policy approach, and we implore the committee to work with cooperatives to preserve cooperative autonomy. Respectfully, we ask the committee to take the following additional steps to improve this bill, and we offer our willingness to work together on that. First example, number one, exempt out-of-state generation. There are legal questions regarding the impact on out-of-state generation units outside of Minnesota. Second would be respect cooperative governance. Third would be to include all technology, and we appreciate the A7 amendments acknowledgement of an inclusion of additional technologies. Thank you, committee, and thank you, Madam Chair, for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and we'll submit further comments for the record.
Thank you, Ms. Andrew. Next, we have Reverend Andrew Davis. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record. And next we have Sarah Moradian. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. My name is Andrew Davis. I am pastor of Union Presbyterian Church in St. Peter, along the banks of the Minnesota River. As a pastor, I believe that each one of us has a moral obligation and that together we have a political duty to care for this good creation. As a resident of St. Peter last summer, I became painfully aware that the Minnesota River itself, the namesake of this great state, is drying up. The bank where children would traditionally fish in the river had become a giant dry sandbar. What will become of us as a people, as a state? What will become of our children and our communities if we abandon our values? I urge you today to put values first, to worry less about cost and worry more about our future. and I urge you to pass this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Next is Sarah Ridian. You're going to say it for me, correct me, and I appreciate that. And after that will be John Brecky with Great River Energy. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Sarah Moradian, and I am the Government Relations and Policy Director for CURE, which stands for Clean Up the River Environment. Thank you for the chance to testify in support of House File 7 today. As a rural organization dedicated to uplifting rural voices and strengthening rural communities, we are excited by the possibilities that House File 7 presents for those communities and peoples of greater Minnesota. We know that solar, wind, batteries, and a modernized grid will allow rural communities to strengthen the resilience and reliability of their energy systems and ensure affordable electricity while also providing clean air and water and soil. House File 7 would ensure that all Minnesotans can realize the benefits of these clean energy solutions. Still, House File 7 is not perfect, and we must think critically about whether a proposed solution would preserve the health and safety of our communities while ensuring quantifiable long-term greenhouse gas emission reductions. For example, large hydro, such as that produced by Manitoba Hydro and sold by Minnesota Power to its customers, has had tremendous negative effects on Indigenous communities. And the broad definition of carbon-free could encourage adoption of technologies like carbon capture, utilization and sequestration, or nuclear, which present their own significant issues, including cost, viability, safety, and environmental justice. The clean energy future is here, and the people of Greater Minnesota deserve the economic and environmental impact benefits of House File 7, that House File 7 would provide just as much and just as urgently as those Minnesotans in the metro areas. Thank you so much.
Next is John Brecky, and after that, Brian Cook with the Minnesota Chamber. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm John Brecky, Vice President and Chief Power Supply Officer with Great River Energy. I want to start by saying we appreciate the author's amendment of yesterday. We support the use of renewable energy credits to offset market purchases and peaking production. We still have some important work to do, but thank you. Going forward, the world will be changed by the development of new energy technologies that move beyond carbon in a cost-effective manner. The timeline of that development cannot be foreseen with precision. In the meantime, our job, and yours respectfully, is to keep the lights on. It's to keep people warm and safe. Our job is to protect people's finances. This is why electric cooperatives exist. It's why we were formed. It's what people trust us to do. Survey after survey has shown that people trust their local distribution cooperatives on energy issues. I'm here today for our members. They are why we are asking for smart changes to this proposal. What this bill ignores is the inherent diminishing return of incremental efforts when taken to the extreme edge. We're asking you not to think in absolutes, but to think in nuance while pursuing these noble goals. We're asking you to think strategically about the economic competitive position of Minnesota's electric supply. With some smart changes, we can achieve these same goals while keeping Minnesota competitive, reliable, and safe. Current state law sets a goal of electricity rates to be 5% below the national average. Let's work together to position Minnesota for economic and environmental success. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brecky. Next is Brian Cook, and after that, Kathy Iverson with the Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thanks. Chair Aikum, Majority Leader Long, members of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. My name is Brian Cook, and I'm the Director of Energy Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to express some of our concerns with House File 7. The Chamber, which represents over 6,300 businesses of all sizes with over 500,000 employees, believes in a triple goal of affordable, reliable, and cleaner energy. We support our members' interests and efforts to advance sustainability, and we work hard to help them reduce energy consumption, divert waste, and minimize environmental impact. Minnesota's utilities have made enormous strides towards providing their customers with cleaner energy. The state's energy transition has transformed our electric supply, and we are already on track to be at least 66% carbon-free within the next 12 years, absent any new government mandates. At the same time, affordable and reliable energy is vital to our state's economic interests. Electricity prices are increasing rapidly. Nationally, since 2002, the average cost for large electric users has grown by 42%. In the same time frame, the cost for Minnesota has grown by 91%. In 2002, Minnesota had the 34th highest cost for large energy users. As of 2021, we now have the 12th highest cost. What used to be a competitive advantage for Minnesota businesses has disappeared, adding to the high burden of doing business in Minnesota from a tax and regulatory standpoint. On the reliability front, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation released their long-term reliability assessment in December that MISO, which Minnesota is a member of, is at a high risk of having inadequate electricity supplies to meet demand. Creating this new government mandate on energy producers on such an accelerated timeline will be expensive. The cost will be passed through to customers on their utility bills. Customers already facing cost increases that outpace the rest of the nation. It will put even more stress on an already stressed grid. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Next is Kathy Iverson, and after that, Dr. Kimberly Wilburn. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Katherine Iverson, and I am testifying on behalf of Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate. We are a multidisciplinary network of over 600 health professionals working for a healthy climate to protect our health. We support unanimously House File 7. Globally, we are facing a climate emergency that increasingly puts our health in jeopardy. Climate effects such as extreme heat, severe storms, flooding, wildfires, drought, and vector-borne diseases are increasingly impacting the physical and mental health of Minnesotans. Climate change is also increasing our exposure to air pollution. Minnesota communities with higher percentages of lower-income people, people of color, and indigenous people are exposed to higher levels of air pollution from all sources. Fossil fuel air pollution was responsible for over 350,000 premature deaths each year in the U.S. since 2018. Reducing air pollution saves lives and prevents asthma, heart disease, and other chronic illnesses. The public health benefits of clean energy are substantial. Moving to carbon-free energy could save Minnesota more than $1.2 billion in avoided health costs between 2023 and 2040 by reducing pollution from power plants. In addition to improving health, a transition to clean energy will benefit BIPOC and low-income families by providing a pathway to well-paying green jobs and reducing energy costs. Moving to 100% renewable energy and electricity by 2040 will accelerate Minnesota's path to a healthy net zero future by 2050. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Iverson. Next is Dr. Kimberly Wilburn, and after that, Annie Levinson-Falk. Welcome to committee, Ms. Wilburn, and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Dr. Kimberly Wilburn. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for allowing us to speak today. I come here today as a mother worried about my children's future, a black woman worried about communities of color, an elected leader and member of the League of Minnesota Cities Climate Caucus, worried about my neighbors and constituents, and as a scientist, worried about all of us to speak in favor of House File 7. We know that communities of color are disproportionately impacted by pollution and climate change, and that Minnesota ranks poorly in many areas when it comes to racial disparities. We are already seeing the effects of climate change in Minnesota and its negative impacts on tourism, agriculture, water, and air quality. Cities are having to include climate resilience in their emergency preparedness planning and budgeting. In the last annual Minnetonka Community Survey, 76% of respondents rated energy conservation as important, and 72% would be willing to see a property tax increase to pay for environmental priorities, including addressing climate change and climate justice. The science is clear, our friends and neighbors support taking action, and we owe it to our children and future generations to act now to urgently transition to a fully clean and renewable energy economy and 100% clean energy.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
Next is Annie Levinson-Falk. Welcome to committee. And after that is Lola Brown from McAllister. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota, a nonprofit advocate for utility consumers. I speak today in support of the bill. From CUB's perspective, this bill will ensure Minnesota's electricity system decarbonizes rapidly while protecting consumers. I was here yesterday discussing energy costs and affordability. CUB is very concerned about the increase in energy costs over the last couple of years. However, cost should not be a reason to delay this bill. Wind and solar are some of the least expensive forms of energy available today. Per kilowatt hour, renewable energy is cheaper than power from coal and often cheaper than gas. Of course, the grid needs different kinds of flexibility to operate with high levels of intermittent renewables, but generally, consumers benefit from the more renewable energy that can be used because of its relatively low cost. So the question is, how much intermittent power can the grid reliably handle and on what time frame? The benchmarks in this bill are certainly aggressive. CUB is confident that utilities can reach upwards of 90% clean energy without risking reliability or increasing costs. And in fact, ratepayers are likely to pay too much if we don't move quickly to cost-effective clean energy sources. I can't sit here today and say, though, that Minnesota can for sure get to 100% clean, carbon-free electricity on this timeline without issues. I think that advances in technology and grid management solutions will make it possible, but that last 10% requires a bit of faith. And that's why it's important to CUB that the bill maintains the off-ramp that's in law today. If it becomes too expensive or if it would compromise reliability to meet the milestones in the bill, then the standards would not be enforced. Thank you, Majority Leader Long, for bringing this important bill, and thank you to the committee for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Next is Lola Brown. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record, and then after that will be Brad Tollerson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lola Brown, and I am a Minnesotan born and raised and a current senior at McAllister College in St. Paul. I'm here testifying today in support of an equitable transition to 100% clean energy and House File 7. At 22 years old, I am faced with many big questions about my future. I don't know nearly anything about what my life will look like, but I do know that without the 100% bill and others like it, my entire generation's future is up in the air. Our decisions are already based on the growing reality of environmental disasters, air that isn't safe to breathe, and water that isn't safe to swim in, let alone drink. I deserve to live in and eventually raise a family in the Minnesota that we all cherish. I believe that Minnesota is ready for this. We won't fall for fossil fuel companies' fear-mongering around reliability concerns. Their desire for profits driven by selling us coal from North Dakota won't sway my conviction that this transition is vital for the clean energy economy, and it needs to happen now. My peers agree. I've spent the last 3 years organizing with my fellow students, and together we've built organizing clubs and forged relationships with Isaiah Minnesota and our representatives, such as Representative Kalee Herr. We've done all this so that we can build enough power to show up on days like today, to demonstrate that we need 100% clean energy. By coming together across geography and generation, I believe we can all have the future we deserve. Thank you.
Next is Brad Tollerson with Otter Tail Power, and after that is Madeline Smerlo with the Clean Grid. Welcome to committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Brad Tollerson, and I serve as Vice President of Energy Supply for Otter Tail Power Company. My comments today include highlights from the written testimony that I've submitted. Otter Tail is one of the smallest investor-owned utilities in the nation. Our service area is very rural. A median-sized community we serve is Winger, Minnesota, with a population of 174 people and a median household income of $38,500. Otter Tail is on a course that will have us generating 50% of our owned and contracted resources from renewables by 2025. Likewise, we are on a track to reduce carbon emissions from generation resources we own approximately 50% by 2025 and 97% by 2050. However, we do have concerns with the legislation. It is prudent to exercise caution in imposing mandates. The pace of the generation fleet transition must be affordable for our customers in towns like Winger, and it must not jeopardize reliability. The Mid-Continent Independent System Operator continues to heighten public awareness on its increasing reliance on emergency protocols and declining reserve margins, and fewer dispatchable resources due to continuing retirements. We appreciate that the legislation affords the ability to use renewable energy credits, or RECs, for compliance purposes. Certainly, we understand policymakers' desire to address climate change, but our primary message is that this work should occur deliberately and with a laser focus on affordability and reliability. The public deserves no less. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. And next is Madeline Smerillo. And after that will be Julie Pierce with Minnesota Power. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, all. Chair Acom and members of the committee. My name is Madeline Smerillo. I'm a senior policy associate with Clean Grid Alliance. Clean Grid Alliance, or CGA, is a nonprofit organization headquartered and working in Minnesota, plus eight additional states in the Midwest. Our membership consists of wind and solar developers, manufacturers, and nonprofit clean energy advocacy organizations. CGA is well known for its technical and policy expertise and ability to bring diverse groups together to advance opportunities for renewable energy in the Midwest and throughout the region. CGA supports House File 7 and its effort to set a 100% carbon-free standard by 2040, but recognizes that siting reforms are necessary to achieve this goal. I'd like to draw your attention to the common sense siting reforms included in the bill, what we call clean energy deployment provisions. House File 7 eliminates the certificate of need requirement for independent power producer wind and solar projects to better reflect Minnesota's changing energy landscape. The bill also reforms and streamlines the permitting process by changing certain requirements for low voltage transmission lines. And it improves the environmental review process by removing unnecessary red tape. Clean energy deployment provisions, though less exhilarating than talking about the 100% standard itself, expedite the permitting process to help us meet our carbon reduction goals. More information on these aspects of the bill is available in your packets, and I encourage you to reach out to CGA with any questions. Thank you for the opportunity to provide this testimony.
Thank you. Next is Julie Pierce, and after that is Joyce Pepin. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Julie Pierce, and I'm the Vice President of Strategy and Planning for Minnesota Power. Our utility has had the privilege to serve a large part of Northeast Minnesota for over 115 years. With 144,000 customers, we power some of the largest industrial customers in the state, along with some of the lowest income counties in Minnesota. We take our responsibility to provide safe and reliable energy to each customer very seriously every minute or every day. There should be no debate in this state that we are a national success story for our distinct and actual reduction in carbon and transitioning to a cleaner energy source. And Minnesota Power is proud to be a longstanding leader in that effort. Our energy supply is currently 50% renewable, and we have reduced carbon by 50% since 2005. We have made this progress by prioritizing reliability, safety, affordability, and benefiting all customers equitably. Our ambitious next steps of our journey to 100% carbon-free energy were recently approved by the Public Utilities Commission. We are removing coal from our operations by 2035 and achieving at least 70% renewable energy by 2030 and 80% carbon-free by 2035. The next decarbonization steps ahead are really more complicated than and consequential than 2 minutes allow. But we appreciate the terrific work by Leader Long and Chair Acom and others to recognize these challenges that are ahead. The bill and amendment provides a number of tools that we need to help us manage in acceleration of this historic clean energy transition. We need to get this right so we can continue to provide this energy to customers, and we look forward to working with you further. Thank you.
Next is Joyce Pepin, and after that, Tyler Hammond. Thank you. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. My name is Joyce Pepin, Madam Chair, and I'd like to thank you and thank you to Majority Leader Long and honorable members of the committee. I serve as General Counsel for Dairyland Power Cooperative, and appreciate the opportunity to testify in House File 7. Dairyland Power is a generation and transmission cooperative located in La Crosse, Wisconsin, serving member cooperatives in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois. Dairyland provides the wholesale power to 24 member distribution cooperatives and 17 municipal utilities, including three electric cooperatives in southwest Minnesota, Freeborn Mower, My Energy, and People's Electric Cooperative. Dairylent has been purposely diversifying its generating resources, which currently include wind, solar, renewable enabling natural gas, coal, hydro, and biogas. Dairylent's sustainable generation plan provides a framework for reliability and energy diversification, considering the economic impact of our members, technological feasibility, social implications, and environmental responsibility. Dairylent is exploring carbon-free power supply technologies, including small modular reactors. Nuclear is the only carbon-emitting resource that can support the integration of renewable resources and ensure a 24/7 power supply. Dairylent has several concerns with the proposed legislation and asked the committee to review key areas of the legislation to improve the bill. I'd like to highlight a few suggestions for your consideration. One, exempt out-of-state generation. There are numerous legal questions raised regarding our out-of-state generation plants and the authority to regulate them across state lines. Last year, the Supreme Court ruled that Minnesota state agencies did not have the authority to implement Minnesota regulatory authority on a proposed natural gas plant located in Superior, Wisconsin. This bill will raise the jurisdiction question via the Federal Powers Act and the limitations of authority beyond a state's borders as written in the Dormant Commerce Clause in the U.S. Constitution. We propose that non-Minnesota generation plants be exempt from the carbon standard bill. Two, move the 100% carbon-free compliance target date to 2050 to be in alignment with other states. It will recognize the long-term nature of utility planning for safe, reliable, and cost-effective energy and the time and technology development required to achieve 100% carbon-free. Three, provide cooperative boards the off-ramp authority rather than the bill's current delegation of that role to the Public Utilities Commission. And four, include all carbon reduction resources and technology to meet the 100% objective. That includes lifting the nuclear moratorium to allow small modular reactors as a future option to meet reliability and carbon-free generation needs. Thank you again for your time. It's an honor to be here and hope you will consider our recommendations.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Tyler Hammond, and after that, Bree Halverson. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tyler Hammond. I'm Vice President of Government Relations for Basin Electric Power Cooperative. Basin Electric serves 12 cooperatives in Minnesota, and in the interest of time, I'm going to echo the comments that have been made by several of my utility colleagues here regarding potential impacts to reliability. I just want to say that we continue to evaluate and pursue technological options to achieve decarbonization. However, it is quite clear that the state of current and expected carbon-free technology, at least in the short term, is inadequate to maintain reliable electric service on its own. For this reason, we are concerned that this proposed legislation will impact the ability of Basin Electric to serve its members in Minnesota reliably and affordably. And in that case, I'm going to echo a few recommendations to address this impact that you've heard. One, make clear that this legislation does not apply to out-of-state generation. Basin's power facilities participate in a 14-state power market. That market allows us to buy and sell power most efficiently. However, it does not allow us to separate carbon-based and carbon-free electrons that flow into Minnesota. By clarifying that this legislation does not apply to generation outside of the state, the legislature will still achieve its goal of reducing emissions within the state and avoid legal issues associated with interstate commerce. Second, allow all carbon-free technology to qualify as eligible energy technology. The energy sources currently identified by the bill do not do justice to the suite of technologies being explored to reduce emissions. The legislation should allow and encourage the development of carbon capture technology, small modular nuclear reactors, battery storage, and any other technology that can provide reliable electricity without increasing emissions. And then finally, I would encourage your adoption of the amendment that's been proposed today that would continue to recognize and uphold cooperative governance. So with that, I thank you for this opportunity and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Bree Halverson is next, and after that, Tim Sullivan. Welcome back to committee. Please state your name for the
record. Hello, my name is Bree Halverson. I am the Midwest Director for the Blue Green Alliance, a national partnership of labor unions and environmental organizations that was started here in Minnesota. So I want to thank you for having me again. So thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee. And I also just want to thank Representative Long and everybody here that was able to bring this bill to this point, which is great. A lot of people coming together to make sure that we have clean energy here in Minnesota. And I just want to highlight a few things, not unlike the testimony that I said about IRA and IIJA. There's a lot of great labor levers within this bill that's going to make sure that workers and communities are able to stand strong and go through this transition. And I don't want to take up a lot of time, and I'll just echo a lot of the great things that my colleague Kevin Prana said from LIUNA. But we urge you to move the state forward to a clean, thriving, and equitable future, and look forward to working on this bill to keep these provisions strong as this progresses throughout the process. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Tim Sullivan, and after that, Commissioner Jeff Lundy. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm Tim Sullivan, President and CEO of Red Hennepin Cooperative Electric Association. We serve 58,000 consumers in western Hennepin County and all of Wright County. And as you know, electric cooperatives, and as you've heard earlier today, serve about one-third of Minnesotans, 1.7 million people, including about 85% of the nation or the state's geography. So on behalf of the cooperatives, we very much appreciate and share the goal of the movement, as you've heard from so many utilities today, towards clean energy. Our concern is not the goal. It's that as currently drafted, the legislation does not adequately protect reliability and affordability for an essential service. As you've heard a couple of times today on the reliability front, the National Energy Reliability Council, or NERC, has twice in the last 10 months alone issued warnings for our region, the Upper Midwest, for, quote, a high risk of energy emergencies. This is happening because we're retiring fossil fuels and we can't replace them fast enough or adequately enough with wind and solar. We also face significant affordability challenges. MISO, again, our region's a coordinator for transmission, announced just this summer $10 billion in additional transmission spending, one of three waves that eventually raised that to $70 billion. So levelized cost of energy for wind and solar is not the only concern. Thought to the committee is we cannot sacrifice reliability or affordability to pursue a cleaner grid. We need to pursue all of those things simultaneously. I'll leave you with two thoughts. We would encourage the elimination of the 2030 and 2035 milestones currently contained in the legislation. We should keep our focus on that 100% standard. And second, please exclude gas capacity resources or peakers. Those resources are absolutely essential in a largely renewable system. They don't run very often. They emit very little carbon, and it's a tiny, tiny price to pay to keep an essential reliability benefit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Commissioner Jeff Lundy, and after that, Barbara Freed. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jeff Lundy, Hennepin County Commissioner. Hennepin County supports the efforts to advance Minnesota to 100% clean energy by 2040. The county is also committed to reducing greenhouse gas emissions and implementing a zero-waste plan, which are strategies identified in our climate action plan. The county would like to continue discussing Section 3 of the bill that singles out HERC because it will take significant state support and partnership to address. One such risk may be potential impacts to emerging energy projects, such as the county's planned anaerobic digester. This facility will convert organics waste to renewable biogas and compost. The facility requires significant financial investments to build and operate, and the ability to sell biogas in the future is critical to the viability of this project. Another unintended consequence of the bill is that modifying the renewable energy status of waste to energy facilities could increase the amount of waste sent to landfills. Waste is delivered to landfills generate methane, which is a greenhouse gas many times more potent than carbon dioxide in terms of climate impact. Landfilling waste negatively impacts climate goals compared to waste recovery. Yet this bill still considers landfill gas to be renewable. Because the issues surrounding waste and energy are nuanced, the county encourages the committee to avoid conflating waste policy with energy policy. Hennepin County is developing a community and stakeholder-driven zero-waste plan that envisions a future without the need for HERC. To make this happen, the county needs support from the state to address producer responsibility for products and packaging, provide additional SCORE funding to enhance recycling, strengthening recycling markets, and provide authority and tools for local government to implement new recycling programs. During this two-hour hearing, 9 semi-trailers of trash will be generated in Hennepin County. We need to take responsibility for that waste, and we look forward to collaborating with all entities to get to that goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Up next is Barbara Fries, and after that, Chris McCann. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Akam, members of the committee. My name is Barbara Fries. I am an attorney with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And on behalf of MCEA and all of our supporters around the state, I want to express our strong support for the 100% bill. Building a carbon-free power grid by 2040, if not sooner, is crucial to reaching net zero economy-wide by 2050. And reaching that 2050 goal is crucial to combating the climate crisis. However, this urgent need is not yet reflected in any of the long-term resource plans that Minnesota utilities have to submit to the Public Utilities Commission. And I know this because the MCEA is deeply involved in many of these resource planning proceedings, analyzing those plans, and urging a more aggressive transition to clean energy. And while Minnesota utilities have indeed reduced their emissions and made progress, thanks in no small part to the renewable energy standard that Minnesota lawmakers passed years ago, their current plans simply do not reflect the accelerated pace of carbon reductions we know we need. The 100% bill will ensure that this acceleration actually occurs and ensure that utilities will seriously plan now to reach 100% clean energy well before 2050. In closing, just one more point, I want to stress that this will not only deliver dramatic cuts to our greenhouse gases, but it will also deliver major health benefits by reducing other air pollutants, especially in those communities that currently bear the brunt of fossil fuel pollution. So we urge you to vote yes on House File 7. Thank you very much.
And next is Chris McCann, and then our final speaker will be Julia Nearbon. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Chris McCann. I'm the chair of the Minnesota Resource Recovery Facility. Thank you, Madam Chair Akam, members of the committee, and Majority Leader Long. On behalf of the MRRA, I am here to express our support, like all the other people, for renewable energy and environmental justice. One of our concerns that we have with this is that as we look at the HF7, we would like you to note that it be revised to prevent public utility policy from interfering with solid waste management policy. Conflation of the two policies will have unintended consequences. And as I listen to the committee and the hearings and testimonies, I have not heard the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's view. And that, with the contradiction of their policies, is concerning to me. HF7 promotes landfilling over resource recovery, and that is what contradicts the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency solid waste management policy. Approximately 1 million tons per year of waste is processed by resource recovery, and in lieu of that, it would be landfilled. That not only contradicts the MPCA, but also EPA and our peers in Europe's policies. And what does that mean? There's plenty of publications that show that the actual emissions from landfills is actually greater per ton than for resource recovery. However, this bill shows that landfill gas is a renewable energy. If you look at the history of Minnesota, we're nearing $1 billion of historical and future estimated landfill cleanup cost. So moving the dial backwards towards landfilling is not productive for us. So for those reasons, we would just
request your consideration for discussion with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and other parties such as MRRA to see how we can further pursue renewable energy and environmental justice without moving backwards in the solid waste management program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And our final speaker is Julia Nirvan. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, everyone. I'm Julia Nirvan, and I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. We are an organization that works in partnership with over 400 faith and spiritual communities across Minnesota to equitably address the climate crisis. I've spent many hours in this building with many of you, and after working many, many long hours to assure an equitable carbon-free future, I'm thrilled that this bill is being considered today. We need 100% clean electricity as fast as possible. It saves money. It creates resilience. It protects our health. It saves lives from reduced pollution in the air and water. It puts us on a sustainable path for our climate, for our people, and for our planet. So thank you to everybody who's made all that work happen. I know this happens over years and not in one session. I have to be honest, there are two things in this bill that we at MNIPL are not terribly happy about. We believe that no community should be left out of this clean energy future. By allowing the NTEC exclusion provision, people of northern Minnesota are one step closer to having a 725 megawatt gas plant that would be situated in a low-income community in Superior, Wisconsin. We have long been opposed to this large natural gas plant and have fought every step of the way to make sure it doesn't happen. We think that this is a compromise. We're also concerned about the Cree communities in Manitoba and believe that large-scale hydro should not be a part of Minnesota's clean energy future. This, too, is a compromise. But I want to end by really thanking Representative Long for the significant work that you've done to bring this bill forward. Minnesota is indeed a model for the nation, and I encourage you to support 100% clean energy for Minnesota. Our children will thank us for making this future a reality.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you to everyone for your testimony. I appreciate people being respectful and concise. And so with that, we can either turn to member questions or amendments.
Madam Chair, now would be a good time for Representative Long to go through that amendment we discussed earlier.
Certainly, we can do that. Representative Long, would you be willing to go through the amendment and address some of the concerns that Representative Garofalo has?
Thank you, Chair Aikum. I would ask if there are specific questions that Representative Garofalo has. I did so at a high level. If there are things that I missed that he'd like me to dig in on, that might be more productive.
Sure. So let's just, if we could just chronologically go through sections 1 and 2 at the beginning, just discuss what those changes were. Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Sure.
Representative Long.
Sure. So section 1 is adding consideration for employment of local workers. And section 2 is allowing cost recovery for employment of local workers. That's trying to help make sure that we are giving the Public Utilities Commission the tools that they need to help make sure that the clean energy transition is benefiting Minnesotans.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Long, so on page 2, lines 20, 21, and 22, how does that pertain to the items you mentioned?
Representative Long.
Page 2, lines 21 and 22, this is currently limited to one facility, which is the Hennepin County's HERC facility.
Representative Garofalo.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Long, what does that have to do with local jobs?
Representative Long.
That's a different section, Representative Garofalo. You were asking me about section 1 and 2 on the first page. 2.20 to 2.22 is a separate provision.
Madam Chair and Representative Long, isn't that section 2?
Representative Long, are we looking at the same?
The ASA runs the correct?
Yeah. Representative Long.
The 2.20 through 2.22 is responding to an environmental justice concern, which is that there are the HERC facility is located in a community where there is significant concern from local residents about the pollution that is cumulative to their communities in addition to the other other pollution sources in that community, and so this is responsive to that concern.
Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Long, so does 2.20 through 2.22, is that just limited to the HERC?
Representative Long.
Yes.
Okay, so.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And then proceeding to the next section, this would be section 16. Can you please just cover it? In here, it references the local job impacts and local workers. Is that to mean just those items, nothing else?
Representative Long.
Sorry, I didn't catch the – maybe you could talk more on the mic. I couldn't catch the online question.
A legislative first. I've been told I'm not loud enough. That's great. Madam Chair, Representative Long, is Section 16 just more of that language regarding local jobs?
Representative Long.
Correct.
Thank you. And Madam Chair and Representative Long, the Section 19 language, this is the this is certificate of need, but it highlights the considered local job impacts. Are these changes to existing statute, or is this the change that's in the bill?
Representative Long.
For the permitting changes that were made?
Existing statute.
Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And then, Madam Chair, on the back page, section 31, can you just cover for us what this docket number is and what it's pertaining to?
Representative Long.
Sure. This docket is the NTEC facility that's currently being proposed by Minnesota Power.
And what is the net effect of this section?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Ackum. So the net effect of this section is to try to keep in place the agreement that was reached between the clean energy community and Minnesota Power when they settled in their most recent resource plan, which is to allow for the consideration of the NTEC facility in future resource plans. So it would mean that the 100% bill would not be taken into account in the immediate docket, which is the affiliated interest agreement that's coming up next year, but would retain the ability for this to be considered in future planning dockets, which was, I think, in keeping with the settlement agreement.
Madam Chair and Representative Long, so assuming that that plant were to go forward, how would it operate with 100% requirement for carbon free?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Ackum, Representative Garofalo. So the 100% clean energy bill has a couple of options if you are a carbon producing facility. One is that you could have RECs, so renewable energy credits. So you would have to offset any fossil fuel generation you have. A second option is that you could run a facility on carbon-free power, so you could, for example, run a gas plant on green hydrogen. A third option is that you could go to the Public Utilities Commission and seek an off-ramp and say that you needed to run the plant for affordability or reliability reasons.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Long, do you have concerns that the RECs will just be used for greenwashing?
Representative Long.
Chair Ackum, no.
And Madam Chair and Representative Long, how is a coal or natural gas plant that's operating considered carbon-free, then, if it's not greenwashing?
Representative Long.
It is not carbon-free.
Representative Garofalo.
Well, then, so operating that plant would not be carbon-free?
Representative Long.
No, under the bill, carbon-free generation means you're not producing carbon. And so if you were attempting to meet one of the standards under the bill and you are generating more carbon than that standard would allow, then one option under the bill, which is the current option under the renewable energy standard and is being maintained in this bill, is that you could have purchased renewable energy credits, which is a widely used and very respected way to measure generation of renewable energy. And so you would have to purchase kilowatt hour per kilowatt hour renewable energy credits for any additional generation that is over the standard.
Representative Long, maybe I asked my question the wrong way. Is that when a natural gas or coal plant is operating, it's emitting CO2 and methane emissions, RECs are sort of a legislative alchemy. They just say that those carbon emissions don't exist and that renewable generation or clean generation somewhere else then is substituted for that generation. So that is, by definition, greenwashing. that is taking a carbon-emitting source and now claiming it's carbon-free.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Aikman. No, that's incorrect. It is using it as an offset for that particular emission, for that particular standard. And we need a mechanism like that, because when you are going to 100% clean energy, for example, we don't want to prohibit purchasing on a regional market like MISO. MISO's regional market is not 100% carbon free, and so you need to have a mechanism to account for the carbon content of the energy production. And so the REC, for example, would be one way to do that and to assure that we are producing 100% carbon free energy that is equivalent to the total sales to the retail customers.
Madam Chair, Representative Long, that generation's already taking place. There's no requirement that it be new and that it be a new offset. In fact, we could use what's being used now are renewable energy credits down in Nevada that are already generating electricity. So there is no offset. That generation already exists.
Representative Long.
Chair Aikman, Representative Gruffo, I don't think you understand how RECs work. So you retire a single REC for a single usage. So the REC is going to one specific outcome, and in this case it would be retired to be credited towards the 100% requirement. So if a utility wanted to use the REC for themselves, they would retire it for themselves. If that energy is going towards being used for this particular purpose, it would be retired for that purpose.
Madam Chair and Representative Long, I do understand how a REC works, and I do understand how they're singly retired. What I'm saying to you is that when that generation takes place, it's still emitting carbon. You're emitting carbon from that source, and when you purchase a REC, it greenwashes over that. There is no reduction in pollution. The generation already exists. This has been studied by such widely known and well-respected scholars as John Oliver on Last Week Tonight on HBO. The common practice of carbon washing and greenwashing, it's well known and it's mocked in the environmental community. So when we have a renewable energy credit being purchased, there is no requirement that that renewable generation be new. It could be existing. As I said, used as the example before in Nevada, they have lots of solar that is being sold as renewable energy credits. That generation is existing today. The only new generation coming online is the natural gas, which is being offset by an existing energy source. This is the criticism of what greenwashing is. If it's not greenwashing, if that's your position, tell me what greenwashing is.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Aikman. So John Oliver's bit was not referring to RECs. It was talking about other forms of offsets. RECs are highly robust, very well regulated, very well understood national markets. And so there is no greenwashing involved in using RECs. If you'd like to strengthen the bill and remove the ability to use RECs, feel free to offer an amendment, Representative Gruffalo.
Madam Chair, may I be allowed to offer that amendment right now?
Representative Garofalo, I think what we're doing is discussing the bill at this point. I think we have an amendment rule, and amendments were supposed to be in yesterday.
The majority leader just offered me the opportunity to clean up the
you,
bill.
You can offer on the floor. How's that?
There'll be another opportunity when the bill goes to the floor if it passes today.
Okay, so, Madam Chair and Representative Long, just to be clear, I'm aware of carbon offsets versus renewable energy credits and the difference there. But it doesn't change the fact that existing renewable energy sources that are existing today on an annual basis will retire those RECs for a new carbon-emitting source. That isn't cleaning up the environment. That's greenwashing. That's taking an existing source of energy that is being supplied and now is including hydro. So existing hydroelectricity will be able to have RECs purchased from it to allow for the creation of new CO2 emissions. Am I wrong?
Representative Long, and then maybe we can move on after.
Yes.
Okay.
You're wrong.
Madam Chair, I would like to move the A8 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Brockwell, can you tell us about your amendment, please?
Sure. Before I begin, Representative Long, are you going to take my amendment?
No.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, thank you, Representative Long, first of all, for the accommodations you did make in this bill, particularly around including hydro as a renewable source. It's always been renewable. It's only been in statute that we have not defined it as renewable, so thank you for doing that. Also, thank you for putting nuclear on a level playing field. With this bill, it will actually preserve our nuclear fleet for at least another 25 years in Minnesota, and I do want to thank you for that. I know there's an emerging bipartisan consensus around that. I do want to highlight, though, members, that you know I recognize that my role in this process right now, my opinion and my vote do not matter. I recognize that. I recognize that there's a 52% of the legislature is in one party, and I am not in that 52%. It's not a joke, but it's true. Like, I could go home for the next 2 years and do nothing, and I could be as impactful in my votes as I would be showing up here every day. I am aware of that. But my number one responsibility in this committee is to try to provide additional information and to try to supplement the information and perhaps change some opinions from members on the other side of the aisle, because your votes do matter, and your opinions do matter. And as part of that context, I think it's important to understand how we have gotten where we're at. In 2007, we passed a renewable energy standard in the state. 90% of the state, 90% of state legislators voted in favor of that. That happened because we brought stakeholders together for geographic, political, IOUs, and cooperatives, and we passed that bill by addressing people's concerns and listening to each other. A year later, we passed a significant mercury reduction bill that was unanimously supported by the legislature. It didn't mean that it didn't cost money. In fact, it cost a lot of money. But we passed that bill to reduce mercury because we knew that neurotoxins landing on our neighbors was the wrong thing to do. And we came together and we made that happen. Fast forwarding roughly 7 years later in 2013, even with the DFL under total control of our state, a solar energy mandate was passed. But as part of that, the bills that were enacted, the all DFL legislature recognized the geographic diversity of our state, recognized the difference between some investor-owned utilities versus others, and also recognized the difference with cooperative service territories. That's why the solar mandate does not apply to co-ops. It's also why the Minnesota Power Service Territory does not have the full impact of the solar mandate apply to them because of their energy-intensive, trade-exposed industries. So take that in those contexts and that history and carry it forward to the bill that we have before us today. And what we have right now is a complete absence of that. We have two investor-owned utilities that are on board for their own reasons of supporting it. But we have cooperative energy service territories that have been largely ignored and whose concerns have not been addressed. I am submitting the A8 amendment to allow the opportunity for generation and transmissions to mimic those responsibilities of the Public Utilities Commission. The reason for that is that our cooperative service territories, with the exception of Dakota Electric, are not rate-regulated utilities. These are member-owned cooperatives, democratically elected leadership in those areas. And that recognition is omitted from this bill. It is a wide, totally different than substantial energy policies we have taken in the past, where we've either had cooperative service territories at the table or we've exempted them from the mandates of the bill. And so, Madam Chair, members, I would ask for your support and I would ask for a roll call on the amendment. Thank you.
A roll call being requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Long, do you have a response?
I do. Representative Graflow, your vote may not be the deciding one today, but your opinion always matters, and I do appreciate your constructive engagement and conversation and dialogue on this. So the I'm glad you brought up the 2007 renewable energy standard. We keep the same requirements for co-ops as exist under the 2007 renewable energy standard, which is that they have to report their compliance with the Public Utilities Commission. Currently, they do that every 2 years. They file one report with the PUC saying whether they're complying or not with law. We are not making them rate regulated. We are not going down the path of having additional burdens than what they already require under state law. So I don't think this amendment is necessary. And co-ops have been complying with the RES since 2007.
Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Brothel.
In closing, the cooperative service territories were at the table for the 2007 bill, right? They participated in stakeholders groups and had their concerns addressed. This hasn't happened this time, Representative Long. Their concerns have not been addressed. Comparing it to the 2007 bill is not accurate. We've heard today opposition and testimony from them. And I would just highlight to members that It's not like when this bill passes, if it passes in its current form, it's not like these folks are just going to go away and do what you told them to. They're not going to obey. They're going to keep on fighting you because it's wrong. And that is going to mean more energy fighting with each other and less energy spent actually reducing costs, improving affordability, and improving reliability. So I would ask members to choose the smart path and vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
A roll call. The clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Vice Chair Kraft?
No.
Representative Altendorf?
Yes.
Representative Bierman?
Bierman votes no.
Representative Carroll?
No.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
No.
Representative Hollins?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Igo?
Yes.
Representative Mekland?
Yes.
Representative Newton?
No.
Representative O'Neill?
Absolutely.
That is a yes.
That's a yes. That's a loud yes.
Okay. Representative Green?
No.
I'm here.
Oh, you are. I'm so sorry. You were hiding there. Representative Stevenson?
That was deliberate. No.
I'm not sure how you were hiding. In plain sight. You have great camouflage.
It worked.
It worked. It worked.
There being 6 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Are there any other questions or discussion on the bill? Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Long. I've been listening to the testimony. I've been reading up on this bill. I think the best way to ask my question is kind of look at this as a math problem. So you have your solution. It's to have carbon-free power in the state of Minnesota by 2040. And I wanted to look at this whole testimony today, and everything this bill does is an equation, how we're going to get there. So when I started to, solve the problem backwards, I wanted to see, okay, what problems aren't solved in the bill. And I think I found some, and if you could answer those for us today, I think that would be great. So if we start this problem from the beginning, we want to make sure we have all the tools available to us to get to this point. And if we start in this bill right away, we're already missing some of those major tools. We're not lifting the nuclear moratorium in this bill. I think that's a huge mistake. And we're not actually implementing carbon sequestration technology, which could mean extending life for, natural gas and coal plants, which would keep that reliability in our grid. If we continue down that path, though, however, you talked about, and I appreciate you mentioning taconite in this project to make sure we have the green technology. However, you missed the other major point of green technology, which is the copper nickel resources that we have in Minnesota. The third largest deposits in the known world exist only 200 miles north of here. Those were not mentioned. So then the problem I have with the equation then is we're going to need to build out this green technology on a scale that's immense to be able to keep up with the electric needs that we have. Well, and this is a fact that I want the committee in the room to know, the only resource that we increased imports in from Russia when we are putting all of our sanctions on them was nickel. Okay, so if we're going to continue to build solar panels, wind turbines, and all the transmission necessary to reach this goal, we're going to need to take these materials from around the world where there's no labor standards, no environmental standards, and as Representative Garofalo said, it's kind of greenwashing, right? We're just pushing stuff out of the room, out of the problem. But if we continue down this problem, the fact that was outlined by some of the testimony here was that we aren't going to be able to buy this power from out of state. So now if we're going down this path and all of a sudden we can't get the materials needed to buy the green technology to expand our grid is on the verge of collapse and we need to buy power, this bill as it sits says we can't go buy power from our neighbors. Then we go dark. And then I worry about northern Minnesota, which I represent, where we have some of the most power-intensive industries of mining and logging. We have people that live out in the country, and if they go cold when it's negative 20, they're going to freeze. I can't have that on my hands. And if we continue down from there, again, we're going to have increased demand with the increased electrification. You know, this is going to couple right into the transportation part. If we're going to continue to see the increase in electric vehicles, we're going to increase the amount of power that needs to be ran to people's homes, to chargers. The grid capacity is only going to increase, but we have no way to provide the baseload power because of the way the bill is written. So my question to you, Representative Long, is can you answer any of those problems that are in this equation? Because right now I don't see the answer to them, and if the answer is not there, then this is a bill that cannot pass and is not going to serve Minnesotans.
Representative Long.
Sure, Chair Aikum, Representative Igo. So I sure can. So you might have misheard the testimony from others. There is no restriction on buying power out of state in this bill. Buying power out of state is perfectly legal now, and it's perfectly legal after this bill passes. The only thing this bill regulates is in-state sales to customers and making sure that in-state sales to customers are carbon-free. In terms of your overall question about reliability, we have a lot of ways to ensure reliability on our electric grid. One is that we are a part of a regional system with MISO, and so we can buy power across state lines, and we can buy power from a large region that includes Minnesota, and that helps give us additional reliability. And we also have increasing opportunity to have carbon-free backups like energy storage. We have utilities like Great River Energy in Minnesota that are pursuing an iron air battery using hopefully iron from northern Minnesota. I've been asking them, they haven't told me for sure, to have the first of its kind technology in Minnesota to have long duration storage that can serve as backup and add extra reliability. And we have other forms of renewable energy that can provide backup for themselves. So you can have wind and solar operating at different times, hydro, et cetera. So there are a lot of paths to ensure reliability in this bill, and I'm confident that we will achieve that.
So the one part of that equation you didn't answer is why is the nuclear moratorium not being lifted in this bill?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Igo, there's no current proposal I know of from a utility to build a new nuclear plant.
Quick follow-up, Representative Igo.
Well, there would be no proposal if there's a moratorium. So why would they talk about proposing it if there's a moratorium in place? Hence, we should be removing it to allow this ability to all the power producers in our state to look into it.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Igo, if you have a utility who wants to put in an application to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to build a power plant in the near future, send them to me and we'll have a conversation.
Next on the list is Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually had an interesting conversation. I won't say with who because I don't want to expose that particular person, but I actually had that exact same conversation about lifting the nuclear moratorium. And this particular person in a previous life had been a nuclear engineer, and he and I talked for quite a long time about the absolute necessity of lifting the nuclear moratorium. So I will send him your way. You probably know who he is. He is not in this room, nor would he be, but I think he is someone that you really need to listen to. And he is a very respected individual, not just in Minnesota, but in the entire Midwest and probably the entire nation. So I just heard that a week ago from a very respected person. So anyway, my question actually is, since the co-ops, all of them that came and testified, they all came with issues and concerns, and many of them were exactly the same, which in the co-ops, as they said, provide power to one-third of Minnesota, mostly rural. I want to know how you're going to address their very, very significant concerns. And I saw you writing them down, so I'm not going to reiterate them, but I believe you know what they are.
Representative Long.
Sure. Well, we have tried hard to address concerns as they've been brought to us in this bill, and I think the amendment does attempt to address a number of the concerns that utilities have brought. We, for example, have a provision in here, as I mentioned in my opening statement, that allows for partial credit so that, for example, if you were having green hydrogen at a particular facility that you were burning under the old bill, you would have had to have 100% replacement for that. Under the new bill, you can credit the carbon-free power, which is incentivizing carbon-free electricity. I don't think some of the comments that were made today I don't agree with. I don't think this bill will create problems with reliability or affordability. If I did, I wouldn't be bringing it forward. Carbon-free energy is the, when we're talking about wind and solar, as I mentioned in my opening statement, it's the most affordable energy that we have on our grid right now. I mentioned to Representative Igo my thoughts on reliability. And if I'm wrong, we have an option in the bill for folks to go to the Public Utilities Commission and to say so and to demonstrate that. There is an off-ramp that we've maintained from the original renewable energy standard that allows for any utility to try to seek an exemption based on reliability and affordability. So I think that the way that the bill is structured now has sufficient flexibility for utilities to achieve it, and I'm happy to work with utilities to find ways to get there.
Representative O'Neill. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad you're going to continue to work with them, because they certainly listed off some really great concerns, including one that you didn't mention is allowing all carbon-free technologies in the bill. And maybe that's just the way they read it, or I'm not quite sure, but I think that has to be on the table if it's not clearly spelled out in the bill in the language. I do have another concern, too. We had two testifiers that talked specifically about the Hennepin County waste-to-energy facility, and it was 1 million tons of waste that is that doesn't go into our landfills. And I'm one of these odd people that actually have toured lots and lots of waste-to-energy facilities. I went to Elk River before it closed. And one thing I find incredibly fascinating about them is the extraction of resources out of the waste stream. So not only are they converting waste to energy, which is helpful, and they're doing scrubbers and everything else. And so if you want to impose more stuff, I think that probably belongs in a different committee. But it's an interesting capture of resources, including all kinds of metals and, you know, and things like that that's important. But in your bill, I'm not quite sure why you're doing that. You did mention that there was an outcry of those around that particular facility, but I want to know, what is your plan then for the 1 million tons of mixed municipal waste? Where is it going to go?
Representative Long.
Thank you for the question, Representative O'Neill. So the statement was made that anything that is not burned is landfilled, and that's just factually inaccurate. There's lots of better alternatives than burning and landfilling, and if you look at the waste hierarchy, burning and landfilling are at the bottom. So we should do more diversion, we should do more recycling, we should do more organics composting, we should try to get upwards on the waste stream. But that's a conversation, I think, for the Environment Committee and maybe not for the Energy Committee. In terms of the specific question, this is only saying that for this particular facility, it is not a renewable energy source. It is not going to have any other impact on its operation or other than that. I think it's pretty hard to argue that waste is a renewable resource. I know that that's how it was defined in the original bill, but waste to me is sort of the opposite of a renewable resource. It's what's at the end of life that we're trying to dispose of. And so at this point, it's only referring to this one specific facility, but I think you'd be hard-pressed if you asked the general public if trash is the same as the sun or the wind. I don't think people would say yes.
Representative O'Neill, quick follow-up.
Just quickly, because I know we're past time. Again, this is something for a different committee, but it's interesting how you phrased the last thing about, you know, trash is not renewable, and I get that, but that facility does so much more than, you know, they're extracting out all kinds of resources, and I think that's the part that's kind of missed. Again, that is a conversation for a different committee. This is the Energy and Climate Committee. So I kind of wish that had been pulled out and maybe dealt with in a different committee or a different bill, I should say. Anyway, I have concerns about that. But my greater concern is that you are working hand in glove with the co-ops, because they do serve one-third of Minnesotans. And so I would hope that you take a greater look at their concerns. They list five or six different concerns. We've only addressed a couple of them in this short amount of time that we have, but there's certainly a room full of people that would like to speak to you more, I'm sure. So thank you, Madam Chair.
As we move on to our next speaker, I just want to remind people that we are about 20 minutes over, and so if we can be as concise as possible. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Long. I'll be quick just to summarize, but, you know, I just want to reiterate Representative O'Neill's concerns about the co-ops, as we all heard in testimony today, again, with them, you know, being one-third of the energy in Minnesota, mostly the rural areas. That is a great concern that I do think we need to go back to the table with them, listen to their concerns, and I do think it's very, very irresponsible to the majority party to not be you know, looking at these issues, you know, in a deeper light. Oftentimes with government, you know, we make mandates with good intentions, and of course that's what we're all here in this room for, correct? You know, we want green energy, we want equity, we want a greener Minnesota. And yet I look at other states, you know, we can some of the talking points today that were reiterated over and over is that this is going to be a cheaper energy source. And we're seeing that in the light of all we have seen is energy prices escalating and escalating. We've also heard over and over in testimony today that this is a more reliable energy source. And I would, you know, and again, this is very, you know, obvious in the news, but we don't have to look back very far when we watched Texas under a severe weather. The windmills didn't spin, the solar panels didn't work, and we were in a really national tragedy there. Just this summer, again, in California, as well intended as it meant to be, with their energy policies, we saw California have to do blackouts. These are the issues that it is irresponsible in a state like Minnesota with our severe weather, especially in these rural areas, that we are pushing something that possibly is just not ready.
Representative Long, did you want to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be real brief. The biggest driver for electric rate increases right now is natural gas. When Xcel Energy was asked recently what the driver for their recent price increases were and to put percentage on it, they said 90% of the increase was natural gas. And that's because natural gas is a variable resource and the fuel costs are passed straight on to the consumer. So if we are putting in resources like wind and solar that don't have fuel costs, that is a much more predictable and much lower price overall for consumers. We can talk more about the Texas and California examples. I'll just say that in Texas, no power fared well. If you talk to MISO, they will say that basically every single source of electricity saw about equal rates of percentage dips during the Texas blackout. And if you heard the quote from the head of the California Independent System Operator on their blackout, they said renewables weren't a factor. So there's a lot of myths out there about reliability with some of these incidents. Extreme weather doesn't work well for just about any resource, but renewables are almost never to blame.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative?
Just real quick. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Long. I just would caution us that we are not, you know, putting this big target for 2040 to be carbon-free, to push this goal and to have the majority party put in front of the energy, you know, which is so important in our state, this, you know, what we want this to pass through so quickly that we're doing it irresponsibly. But thank you.
Representative Mecklen, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You were having a back and forth with Representative Garofalo a little while ago, and you were getting really close to something, and I was hoping that's where it would go, but you were talking about RECs. Now, it's my understanding that Xcel is going to build two smaller gas plants, one in Lyon County, one in Fargo. And as of 2040, the one that would be in Minnesota, would they have to buy RECs for any power produced out of that gas plant at that time?
Representative Long?
Yes.
Representative Mike.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So they would not only incur – let me ask you this. They're incurring the cost of creating the electricity by whatever the cost to run the gas plant, and then they have to buy additional RECs beyond that to be able to sell that to accommodate this 100% rule. Do you know how much these RECs cost and how much it would increase the cost per kilowatt at that point when this rule goes into effect?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. So there are, in making those determinations, the Public Utilities Commission would weigh costs to ratepayers, and so they would weigh various proposals and look at what the impact would be on the ratepayers, and so they would weigh what keeping a gas plant on with RECs purchasing would be versus other forms of power and other options. And if there was a determination made that that was the most affordable and reliable option by the Public Utilities Commission, then that would be approved. I don't know. I can't tell you what the REC price will be in 2040. It's an open market. It's a national market. So I don't have that number for you now, but that's why we have a Public Utilities Commission process that looks at these issues in real time with real proposals.
Anything further, Representative Mecklen?
Yes, Madam Chair. So, but either way, there would be an additional cost. I mean, there's clearly additional costs. Is there anybody in this audience that has know of any studies on what this bill is going to overall do to ratepayers, or has this been heavily taken into? Because I mean, I'm reading this thing here from American Experiment, and they've got some numbers in here that are kind of scary. And I think the gentleman's even sitting up there. I don't know if he's got a minute or not, because if someone can explain this to me, because you're saying this is going to make it's not going to have any impact on reliability or affordability, but then you have somebody who's got all this here. Now, I realize you probably don't agree on some stuff, but I think these voices should be heard, because you talked about the number one driver of increased electricity right now is natural gas. So let's go back to prior to that spike when natural gas spiked, and prior to then it was significantly cheaper. Then what made my power bills at home go up every year after year after year when natural gas was so darn low? And even on top of that, I invested in high-efficiency appliances. I now actually, you'd be proud of me, I have an air source heat pump now.
Look at you, Representative Macklin.
But I will tell you, I was right. For the last 3 years, it does not work below 3 below 0. So it switches over to my lovely propane, which is really expensive right now. Nevertheless, I don't think we have enough transparency on all the different effects that this could have on the actual prices. Everybody knows inflation's out of the charts right now. Everybody's feeling it. And if this even increases the cost 0.5%, how many people will end up not being able to pay their bills or end up having to not have a place to live because they literally just go belly up? And my other concern I'm going to make about this whole thing is while we do more and more of this, the one thing I don't hear anybody talk about, we see there's different food shortages going around the world, and we are covering up. Currently, Sherburne County is scheduled to have 20% of all their agricultural acres covered. And we continue to do this throughout the nation. How many acres of agricultural production can we take out of play when we could produce the same amount of megawatts with micronuclear on a tiny little footprint and then still have all the farm fields? So I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Our last question, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'd request a roll call on the final passage of the bill.
A roll call being requested. There will be a roll call.
Thank you. Madam Chair, our key to the future in Minnesota is to do smart energy policy. That means doing things that are both cleaner and cheaper. Unfortunately, we see in recent history and going forward that we're doing the exact opposite of this. And there's one story that comes to light of the how well-intentioned policies can cause problems. And poor Representative Hollins has to hear this for the second time today, because you heard this in the Property Tax Committee already. In Aiken County, there is a mine, the Tamarack Mine, which is a rich deposit of nickel. Nickel is a key resource that is needed for the coming electrification of motor vehicles across our country. I'm proud of the fact that I've owned a Tesla for 8.5 years, something I've only mentioned about 1,000 times in the legislature. But it's clear that whether you're a supporter of electric vehicles or not, that a growing amount of our transportation energy fuels will be coming from electricity. In Washington, D.C., the Biden administration has wisely decided that we do not want to replace our foreign dependence on oil with resources for batteries that are dependent from other countries. And so one of those things is nickel. And there is one nickel mine operating in the nation right now. It's in Michigan, and it's going to be closing relatively soon. It's almost retired. And so we have the benefit here in Minnesota of having a very rich nickel deposit in Aiken County, and there's a company called Talon that has a contract with Tesla to supply nickel for those batteries. Again, domestic sourcing, a great opportunity to move Minnesota to the front of this transformative industry. And what is happening is that that mine is going to be loaded onto rail cars. The ground is going to be dug up and put onto rail cars, and the rail cars are going to ship that material out to western North Dakota. And in western North Dakota, that is where it's going to be processed into nickel. That is where the $430 million of investment will come from for the value added of the products in our ground. To make matters worse, over $110 million of this is being funded by the federal government. The Biden administration took a look at the plan and agreed with Talon and said, yeah, you can't, they're not going to let you build that in Minnesota. So now, in an effort to reduce pollution, we are going to take part of Minnesota, put it on diesel-powered locomotives, and ship it out to North Dakota. And keep in mind, this is all being done in the context of reducing pollution. Now, I don't have the exact BTU numbers on this, but that is, Madam Chair and members of the committee, pretty stupid, right? Taking part of Minnesota and moving it via a train out to Western North Dakota so they get the jobs and all the emissions that are coming from that. My point is that when it comes to energy generation, one of the problems we have here is our power prices are rising too much. And in a dynamic world, businesses will transition their industry out of Minnesota. This is why the Grudeau recycling, steel recycling plant west of St. Paul closed and outsourced many of their operations to Nebraska. This is recycling. It is no longer in Minnesota primarily because of our high energy prices. And if we ignore affordability, if we ignore reliability, we're going to have more stupid things like the Tamarack mine moving materials to Western North Dakota. It increases pollution, it increases cost, and it's bad for Minnesota. And I would hope, if there's anything we've taken from this hearing today, I hope there are some DFLers who will work together to try to stop that from happening. That having nickel deposits for clean energy shipped to Western North Dakota, that's not Minnesotan, and it's bad. So I would, that is illustrative of the problems we have in this bill. I hope that the author has the opportunity to work with the co-ops in addressing their concerns. Perhaps maybe one senator will get enough pressure from the co-ops or dialogue from the co-ops that they'll be able to engage on this. But I'll be voting no on the bill today and would encourage members to do the same. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any closing comments, Representative Long?
Thank you, Chair. I'll be real brief. Thank you, members, so much for the discussion. Representative Garofalo, my door is open to anybody. I'm always open for conversation. And I just want to thank members and the members of the public for testifying. There's a lot of hard work that went into this bill. This has been a five-year process to get to this point where we're moving this out of committee. And it's going to be a good thing for Minnesota. It's going to create good jobs. It's going to be the biggest step that we've taken as a state to tackle climate change. And I urge your yes vote.
The chair votes aye.
Representative Kraft.
Happy to vote aye.
Representative Altendorf.
Altendorf, no.
Representative Bierman.
Bierman votes aye.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Representative Long. I vote aye.
Representative Davis.
Davis votes no.
Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Hemmingson-Yeager, aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Newton.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Ream.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is re-referred to the General Register. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.